How's it going? Hey, I'm Jeremiah. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 13th of 2009. I have a home group. I have two, actually. It is Sunday Night Yana Speakers Group, which is fantastic. Come check us out. I also have the Bill and Bob's Excellent Adventure Group over at the Watermark Church on Saturdays at 7:30. Also great. Come check it out. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor as a sponsor as a sponsor as a sponsor, so on and so forth. I can't speak for the next guy up. I don't know who he is anymore. I also am available to sponsor others. That was funny, by the way. Anyways, so we'll just get right into it. We got 15 minutes, so let's have some fun. This first part of my story is just kind of me. It doesn't make me an alcoholic. It isn't, you know, what drove me to drink. It was just the idiosyncrasies that was my childhood life. So when I was 4 years old, I saw my dad crucified in a Christian play. We grew up really strong as a Christian, and so we're sitting in the back row, you know, blah, whatever, and my dad's playing the part of Jesus, obviously, and so he starts coming down the line, the middle line. He's carrying this big wooden cross, he's got the ring of thorns on his head, and there's this dude behind him just whipping him, right? And he takes the cross up to the stage, sets it down, gets on it. The guy takes out this real nail, and there's like this real hammer, and like just nails it into the wood, and I'm like four, like, just messed up. And you know, come to find out later, we were older, the guy was far enough back, didn't actually whip him, they clipped the thorn, so nothing was actually there, and you know, they nailed below him, no holes in him and anything, but I'm four, you know, that's real messed up. So at the end of the play or whatever, my dad comes up to me and my brothers and is like, no, it was fake, see, you know, everything's fine, there's no holes in my hand. We're like in the story, right, you know? So dad was Jesus, you know, for a long time, and that really confuses you as a kid, and so you have to be really good when your dad's Jesus, you know, you gotta be a really good kid, which was fine for a little while. We went to private Christian school for a good and hot minute, which was fine there too, because everybody thought the same way, looked the same way, act the same way, talked the same way, believed the same thing. It's fine to fit in, it's easy to fit in when everyone's a drone, you know, it's cool. So we go to public school for the first time in fifth grade when I was 9-ish or 10, however that math works. But anyways, and I was terrified because in Christian school they told us that if you ever go to public school that everyone worships the devil, everyone's on drugs, everyone has a gun, and, you know, just it's terrible there, and teachers have to sit behind bulletproof glass. And so I was just freaked out, you know, and I went there, and none of it was true, but, you know, I was just on the edge all the time, like, what's going on, you know? So it was really awkward for a long time. Like, I remember in seventh grade, I yelled at this one kid for listening to Nine Inch Nails, which is one of my most favorite bands, but I yelled at him for listening to Nine Inch Nails because the nails that they used to nail Jesus into the cross were 9 inches long, so I yelled at him for being a heretic. You know, so it's really weird. So my first experience was not necessarily alcohol. It wasn't necessarily anything. It was in fifth grade, and I was at a sleepover at this guy's house, and somebody's older brother told us that if you smoked a bunch of pine needles, you could get really high, right? So we went out and got like a pound of pine needles or whatever, just gathered them from the yards, and we rolled them up in this notebook paper, right? And so it has this massive like Cheech and Chong style blunt with like notebook paper and masking tape on it, and so we start, you know, puffing on that thing, and nothing happened, you know, obviously. And but something happened to me, because I kind of, you know, I learned how to win friends and influence people, and that was by doing whatever it is that you wanted me to do, because you thought I was cool by doing that. And you know, so that's what happened to me then, and it was real weird, but I thought I was really bad for doing it. You know, it was like the first like rebel thing I did, was smoking pine needles. And so in seventh grade, same kind of thing. His friends went over to their house, drank some wine coolers, didn't really get drunk, whatever. I know, big time. Pine needles and wine coolers starts me off. But there was strawberry too. But you know, nothing happened. You know, but once again, hey, good job. You know. So ninth grade comes around, and I get drunk for the first time. I'm hanging out with my brother's wife's brother. They're off doing something, whatever, but I'm at their apartment. You know, they're in their 20s, and, you know, I'm here, this little teenager kid, and, you know, they're just feeding me drinks. And it was great. You know, it was one of the best things ever. I was awkward. I was nerdy. I played Dungeons & Dragons. I was in chorus, I was in drama, you know, I was just this awkward, weird, little kind of chubby kid that, you know, like, whatever, like, ha, let's be friends, no, and so it was weird. But, you know, so here I am getting drunk for the first time, and I think my sponsor says it best, or at least he said this a long time ago, and it hit me then, and I still say it today, is, you know, I didn't get taller, I didn't get thinner, I didn't get more popular, I didn't get cooler. What happened is, it was like I was carrying this backpack around that was full of stones. You know, it was like this 100-pound backpack. And I was able to just take it off and set it down. And I was able to just breathe a little bit, you know, just, okay. The weight of the world wasn't on my shoulders anymore, and it was going to be okay, you know, just getting through. And I looked at myself in the mirror in the bathroom, and I said, you know what, we're going to feel like this all the time. And I meant all the time. I didn't mean after 5 o'clock. You know, I didn't mean on the weekends. I didn't mean anything like that. I meant all the time, we're going to do this. And so from then on, I set out to do that, and I did pretty well by that. I remember we used to, because we had older brothers and older brother friends and stuff, and so we could procure liquor every now and again that way. And I hated beer, I hated wine, and I hated liquor, but I loved being drunk, right? So what do? Well, you get one of your brother's older friends to get you and your friend a fifth of Albertsons brand vodka. Call out right there. And then you leave it in your trunk all day, because that's what you have to do because you're 16 and it's just in the trunk of your car. And then you go out by the lake that night and you chug it. And you pick out a star and you hold on to it and you drink and 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 drink until your body says stop, you know, and then you drink a little bit more. And then you hold on to it as long as you possibly can. Then you just yak everywhere. And then you do that 2 or 3 more times, and then you're just really drunk. And that's kind of how my drinking went, you know. It's just, let's just go. Let's go in. Let's go all in, 100%. I guess my drinking career can be characterized by things that I began to trade away for my drinking. At first, you know, 16, 17, didn't really trade much away. You know, it was a lot of fun, having a lot of partying. Everybody's in high school. It's all fun and games, you know. Senior year, I had an audition to Juilliard for singing, acting, and dancing, the New York School of Performing Arts. I had the first audition the first day, and I didn't go. Because I said, at the time, I said I didn't want Shakespeare shoved down my throat, which was a lie. Later on, I told people that, you know, I was with my girlfriend CJ, and I didn't want to leave her, and that was a lie. Later on, I told people that I was afraid that I would get rejected. That also was a lie. The truth was is that the party was down here, and I didn't know anybody up there, and I knew how to get liquor, I knew how to get everything else that I wanted to get, and do what I wanted to do, and I could do it all down here. So I traded that away. Later on, I moved out and lived in my parents' house, lived in an apartment, you know, had just some Joe job cooking somewhere, and the next thing I traded away was the girl, CJ, because, you know, she just got tired of watching me just destroy myself slowly over time. So eventually she left, alcohol was more important, and then I ended up trading those friendships away, you know, because those guys don't really like it when you can't pay bills, because everything that you have goes to the bottle, you know. And so they kicked me out, and I moved down to Gainesville, and eventually I trade that away, my relationship with my brother. I trade that away because that alcohol is more important to me than that. We're skipping over a couple of years here, this and there. And then eventually what you get to is a place where all of your friends in Gainesville, you've gone through a couple of them because they come here, they come to Gainesville, they go to school for a little while, and then they leave because they've graduated. And then that happens 2 or 3 times, and you're still doing the same thing. And I'm still doing the same thing that I was doing 4, 5, 6 years ago. You know, and just life gets pathetic after a while. And that's really where, you know, my drinking career takes me. I can't go to work when I work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon because I can't wake up on time. I can barely scrape 2 dimes together to get booze, so I sell my plasma on Tuesdays and Thursdays for $20 and $40 so I can get enough money to drink. And, you know, then eventually you think about suicide, you know, and that's kind of where my drinking career gets me. You know, there's other fun stories, you know, did lots of weird stuff, but I mean, ultimately, it's just a pathetic mess, you know, that nobody wants to be around, and I don't want to be around anybody else because I think you're going to judge me, you know. Eventually, I call my parents, and I'm like, hey, help, and so they say, yeah, come on down, and I come down to Tampa, and I go to HCC, not the college, and so many people get that joke, I like that. So I spent some time there, and, you know, it was a great place. You know, there's a lot of things I absolutely needed to get off my chest there, and some therapists I needed to talk to. Most important thing that they absolutely did was make sure that we went to an AA meeting every single day. And they said within 30 days, you had better have a sponsor. I had a sponsor pretty quickly. Underneath that, I kind of met the guy who I wanted to sponsor me through random circumstances a couple of days before I went in there, but whatever. And they just say, you know, before you leave here, you have to get through a fifth step. And I think that's a pretty good idea. You know, so within 30 days, 30 or 60 days, I don't think you remember either. No. I was through a fifth step, you know, because I was tired of being in pain, you know. And the only thing that I knew, absolutely 100%, was that my way wasn't working anymore. Nothing that I ever thought to do. My best solution before I came to treatment, my best solution at the time was, if you start smoking crack, you will quit drinking so much. It is a true statement, I'm assuming. But that's not a great solution. My buddy Blair once said a long time ago that, you know, it came to a point where his solutions were worse than his problems. You know, and I agree with that 100%. You know, that was my solution. It's like, well, you don't need to, if you're not, don't want to drink so much, start smoking crack. Like, that's not a good plan. You know, that's where my best thinking gets me. So I was absolutely ready to just listen to somebody else for a little while and do something else. So I did that, lived in the three-quarter program. I was at HCC for like 9 months, and then I moved out with my brother and a friend. And, you know, I started getting things back and started going through life's up and downs and had to go with sobriety. I can't tell you about every single up that I've had here, because sometimes one of the best is just that things are at peace these days. You know, that's the best high there is for me these days, is because I'm not afraid on a daily basis. I was just so afraid all the time back in the day, you know, just all the time, so afraid. I'm not afraid anymore. I've gone through some bad things in sobriety. I'm a massage therapist now. I work for a friend's dad, in a friend of the program's dad, and I've worked there for, coming up on April, I've worked there for 4 years, and I love it there. I'm a massage therapist there, and it was, at the time, it was very dramatic trying to go through and get my massage license. So I apply, right? I get out, I apply, wait a couple weeks, nothing happens. All my friends that I went to school with, they're getting their massage therapy license. I call up the state. They're like, oh yeah, you need this one form, so fill that out. So I fill that out, send it to them, wait 2 weeks, call them back. I'm like, hey, what's going on with my license? They're like, oh yeah, you'll be licensed by the end of the day. I'm like, cool. So I post on Facebook, call my parents, you know, call my sponsor. I'm like, I'm licensed. And like 20 minutes after I tell the entire world, this lady calls back and is like, oh yeah, you're not. Right. Okay. So you have to be on this phone call in like a month from now to talk about whether we're going to give you a license or not. I'm like, aw. So we wait a month, get on the phone call, wait on the phone call for like an hour and a half. I'm like, hey, wait a second. Am I supposed to be on this call? They're like, hey, hang on a second. So the guy gets off, gets back on. He's like, hang up, I'm going to call you. Calls me. He's like, yeah, you're supposed to be on this call, but you're not on the docket. So legally, we can't talk to you about your license right now. You have to wait another month to go and talk in person. So I've got to wait another month now. And I call up my sponsor, and I'm like, what is going on, man? Like, I'm sponsoring people. I'm going to meetings. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And he's like, yep. Sometimes life just kind of poops on your chest. You know, he used a different word, but, you know, I'm speaking from the podium. You know, and I was like, all right. That was actually really good advice at the time. And later on, got the license, you know, been working for 4 years, yada, yada. Later on, I decided that I wanted to join the military, right? And my dad was a 30-year retired master chief. And so I decided that, you know, I want to join the military. It's been a tradition in my family for a long, long time. And so I went and I go talk to a recruiter. They're like, okay, well, you need to be 2 years out of treatment. You know, I was 2 years sober. They said you need to be 2 years out of treatment. So I was like, okay, that's another 9 months. So I changed everything about my life. Changed what I ate, changed what I listened to, I changed what I wore, changed how I lived my life. You know, I joined a CrossFit gym. I was running, exercising, doing everything I possibly could every day. At the peak of my physicalness, but I'm chubby again now, don't worry about it, but like at the peak of my physicalness then, I could do like 17 pull-ups, you know, dead hang pull-ups, just crazy amounts of stuff, you know, just physically ready to go. I got 30 seconds, you're right. And then I go to the recruiter's office the day of, and you know, we put my paperwork in of me going to treatment, this and that, and he's like, yeah, you're clear. I go to the day of to sign up and everything, and he calls me over and he says, what was the last 4-year social? I gave it to him. He was like, it's not this. I said, no, it's not that. And he said, oh, well, when I called you the other day and said that, you know, you had passed, I was looking at the wrong Jay Taylor. You can't get in. I was like, okay, well, where do we go from here? He was like, we don't go from here. You don't get in. You know, I spent almost a year of my life getting ready for just this. You know, I wanted to give love and life for my country. You know, I was taking the ASVAB there to put me up. I was going to be a corpsman. I was going to go over with the Marines, you know, and fight. And they said, nope, you're not good enough. You're not good enough to go die. That's how I took it, at least. And it's not, you know, whatever. You know, we're good now. But that was probably one of the hardest days of my entire life, you know. I called my sponsor, I cried, talked to my dad, and I cried, you know. I smoked a whole bunch of cigars that day. And, you know, but the only way that I was actually able to get through that is because I had been around here long enough. I had made enough friends around here long enough. I had a large network that I knew that I could call and talk to at any time. And I did. And I used that network before, and I used it that day. And people came, picked me up, took me to a meeting, took me out. We went and ate for a week. You know, they was like, they're on Jeremiah watch. You know? And that's what we do. And that was the only way I was able to get through that, you know? I can get better because you guys are better. And you guys can get better because we're better. You know, I can't do this by myself. I can do this with you guys. That's what I got.